Stories and content in Weird Darkness can be disturbing for some listeners and is intended for mature audiences only. Parental discretion is strongly advised.
Once upon a time, Clever Tom found himself walking in the meadow by his home in rural Ireland when he came across a leprechaun propped up against a fence post, fast asleep. Tom couldn't believe his eyes. His grandparents had told him stories about the fairies, but he assumed they were just fairy tales, not actual fairies. But this one was in the flesh, an honest-to-goodness leprechaun. He knew what that meant. If he could capture the leprechaun, the fairy creature would be obliged to lead him to a buried treasure. For a poor farm boy, this was the chance of a lifetime. Tom seized the opportunity, and the leprechaun. The leprechaun was sleeping, after all, it wasn't that hard. Startled awake, the leprechaun immediately understood his mistake. Sighing, he agreed to lead Tom deep into the forest to the tree, under which a treasure was buried. Tom was overjoyed. This is what he had always waited for. Tom could finally leave the farm and find adventure in the big city. But in haste, Tom forgot a shovel in a wheelbarrow. There was no way he could dig up the treasure. Even if he did, there was no way to transport it back to his home. Tom racked his brain. There had to be an answer. And then he had it. From his pocket, Tom extracted a bright red ribbon. Tying it around the base of the tree, he knew it would guide him back to this exact spot. Before he released the leprechaun, however, Clever Tom showed why he earned his nickname, Clever. He extracted a promise from the fairy, who, being a fairy, could not tell a lie, that the leprechaun would not remove the ribbon from the tree. Satisfied with the positive response, Tom released the leprechaun and raced home to gather his supplies. When Tom returned, his heart sank. No, the leprechaun had not removed the ribbon. He promised he wouldn't. But he did tie an identical ribbon on every other tree for miles in every direction. Clever Tom wasn't the clever one after all. I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Weird Darkness. Welcome, Weirdos. I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Weird Darkness. Here you'll find stories of the paranormal, supernatural, legends, lore, crime, conspiracy, mysterious, macabre, unsolved, and unexplained. If you're new here, welcome to the show, and if you're already a member of this weirdo family, please take a moment and invite someone else to listen. Recommending Weird Darkness to others helps make it possible for me to keep doing the show. And while you're listening, be sure to check out WeirdDarkness.com, where you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and more. Coming up in this episode, it's St. Patrick's Day, time to celebrate all things Irish, including the holiday's unofficial mascot, the leprechaun. But how much do you really know about the little guy? We'll cover some of what you probably already know and also what you likely don't yet know about these little fairies known as leprechauns. Now bolt your doors, lock your windows, turn off your lights, and come with me into the Weird Darkness. That's right, I said fairies. Although they might not match your initial idea of what a fairy is, leprechauns are considered a part of the family. Like other fairies, they're small in size and prone to mischief. The miniature men are said to be descendants of Tuatha De Danann, a group of magical beings that served under the Gaelic goddess Danu. According to legend, this mythical group lived in Ireland long before humans inhabited the land. The word leprechaun actually means small body. It's believed to be a variation of the Middle Irish word lucrapon. Lu means small and corp means body, so Lucorpon, small body. Some sources say leprechauns are derivatives of the Irish deity Lug, god of the sun and of arts and crafts. After the rise of Christianity, Lug's importance was diminished and he was demoted to a shoemaking folklore character, that is, a cobbler known as Lug Cromain. You ever notice that all the stories and images you've seen of leprechauns, that they always seem to be male? That's because the leprechaun species has no females. As a way of explaining why there is no record of female leprechauns and therefore no way to procreate in the traditional sense, some sources claim leprechauns are the unwanted children of the fairy community. As a result, leprechauns are described as grouchy, untrusting, and solitary creatures. Then again, I'd be grouchy and solitary too if I couldn't date. Although the little Irishmen are now synonymous with the color green, they weren't always. Early accounts of leprechauns describe them as wearing red and sporting a variety of hats, often three-cornered hats. Although without any girls to pursue, I'm not really sure why they bother spiffing up. Also sporting red is the rambunctious Cloricon, a mythical creature that shares many characteristics with the leprechaun. These beings are always described as drunk and surly. They're often seen in stories riding animals at night or clearing out entire wine cellars. Some accounts explain these troublemakers as the night form of leprechauns. After a hard day's work, the bearded fairies get so tipsy they become an entirely different species. Other stories describe them as a close relative to the leprechaun. Either way, they sound like men who make lousy drunks. Leprechauns are known for their money, the pot of gold being the most obvious, and there's apparently a lot of money in the cobbling business as well. Since they spend most of their time alone, seeing as there are no leprechaun babes, the tiny green men pour all of their energy into crafting shoes. In the magical world, most spirits, fairies, and other creatures have a distinctive sound that is associated with them. Some entities, such as the Irish fairy Banshee and the Hispanic spirit La Llorona, are said to emit a mournful wail signifying their presence. In the case of the leprechaun, it's the tap-tap-tapping of his tiny cobbler hammer, driving nails into shoes that announces they are near. In his collection of Irish fairy and folktales, W.B. Yeats offered an 18th-century poem by William Allingham titled The Leprechaun, or Fairy Shoemaker, which describes the sound thus. Lay your ear close to the hill. Do you not catch the tiny clamor? Busy click of an elfin hammer? Voice of the leprechaun singing shrill as he merrily plies his trade? While some stories attribute the leprechaun's wealth to the fine shoes they make, others say they protect the treasure of the entire fairy world. One tale says leprechauns act like bankers to make sure the frivolous fairies don't spend all their gems at once. Wherever there are leprechauns, there are stories of people trying to steal their gold. The rule is, if you're lucky enough to catch a leprechaun, you can never take your eyes off of him or he'll disappear. According to Irish legends, people lucky enough to find a leprechaun and capture him, or in some stories, steal his magic ring, coin, or amulet, can barter his freedom for his treasure. Leprechauns are usually said to be able to grant the person three wishes, much like the magical genie in the lamp, but dealing with leprechauns can be a tricky proposition. The leprechaun plays several roles in Irish folklore. He is principally a roguish trickster figure who cannot be trusted and will deceive whenever possible. In her encyclopedia, Spirits, Fairies, Leprechauns, and Goblins, folklorist Carol Rose offers a typical tale of leprechaun trickery, which I shared at the beginning of this episode, concerning a boy who managed to get a leprechaun to show him the bush in the field where his treasure was located. Having no spade or shovel, the boy marked the tree with one of his red garters, then kindly released the sprite and went for a spade. Returning almost instantly, he found that every one of the numerous trees in the field sported a red garter. Obviously, the boy should never have allowed the leprechaun to go free, at least not until the treasure was found and dug up. The boy was extremely fortunate to find the fairy asleep, as leprechauns are practically impossible to catch, but making a leprechaun trap is possible, and a great activity to share with your children on St. Patrick's Day. All you need to get started is something shiny to lure the little men in. The traps can be as simple as a shoebox or elaborate as your family can imagine. Although no one has caught anything yet, at least not that I know of, it doesn't hurt to try. Constantly being chased for one's gold, or breakfast cereal, can take a toll on any fairy's demeanor. As a result, leprechauns are distrustful and secretive. This attitude doesn't mean they won't loosen the purse strings if touched by a bit of kindness, though. One legend mentions a down-on-his-luck nobleman who offered a leprechaun a ride on his horse. In return, the man returned to his crumbling castle to find it filled to the ceiling with gold. Something you might want to keep in mind if you see a less-than-1-foot-tall humanoid wearing green and sporting a beard hoping to thumb a ride on the side of the highway. So where can you find leprechauns? Ireland may be the first answer that comes to mind when asked where in the world you might be most likely to spot a leprechaun, but Portland, Oregon is home to its very own population of tiny pot-of-gold-loving Irishmen too. They've even got a dedicated area, Mill Ends Park, to prove it. Here's a bit more about the only leprechaun colony west of Ireland. Upon his return home from World War II in 1946, Dick Fagan went back to work as a journalist at the Oregon Journal, where his second-floor office overlooked what is now known as Nito Parkway. Amidst all the traffic and activity that took place outside his window, Fagan became fascinated with one element of his view. A tiny hole had been placed in the median for a light pole. Fagan watched as weeds began to fill in the spot where the light pole was meant to be installed, but he wasn't happy with that either, so he planted some flowers too. Making that tiny hole in the ground pretty was only the beginning of the attention Fagan began lavishing upon the space. In his Oregon Journal column, Mill Ends, which, like the irregular pieces of leftover lumber it was named for, shared interesting little stories, he often referenced the leprechauns who lived in the park. Fagan conveniently was the only person who could see Patrick O'Toole, the leader of the leprechaun community. He also apparently spoke to him. When the mayor of Portland proposed an 11 p.m. curfew on all city parks, Fagan published a response from O'Toole, who threatened a leprechaun curse upon the mayor. The leprechauns were subsequently allowed to stay. Due to Fagan's Irish heritage and the leprechauns who purportedly inhabited the park, Mill Ends Park became dedicated as such, quite appropriately, on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 1948. 28 years after its dedication, Mill Ends Park became an official city park in 1976, again on St. Patrick's Day. Each year, various holiday-themed events take place on this site, this tiny little 2-square-foot site. Yeah, Mill Ends Park measures just 2 square feet, which seems an adequate size for what Fagan was fond of describing as the only leprechaun colony west of Ireland. Guinness World Records has recognized it as the smallest park in the world since 1971. The park has become something of a must-see oddity in Portland, and many residents and visitors have made their own contributions to its growth. A tiny swimming pool with a butterfly diving board, statues, and a pint-sized Ferris wheel, which was delivered by a normal-sized crane, are just a few of its amenities. In order to accommodate construction on the parkway in 2006, the park had to be moved temporarily. It moved back in on March 16, 2007, the day before St. Patrick's Day, with bagpipers playing and Fagan's wife looking on. Fagan sadly passed away in 1969. In December 2011, the Occupy Portland movement installed a flash mob of plastic army men and tiny signs at the park to illustrate their mission. One of the demonstrators, Cameron Scott Witten, was arrested when he refused to leave. A week before St. Patrick's Day, in 2013, someone stole the park's one and only tree, only to return it 1 week later. I can only assume stealing from leprechauns brings you the opposite of good luck. Just because you don't personally see the leprechauns at Mill Ends Park, or anywhere else for that matter, it doesn't mean the leprechauns aren't real. One man claims to have found evidence that they truly do exist. In 1989, a local businessman in Carlingford, Ireland, claimed to have found evidence of a real leprechaun on a mountain called Slieve Foy. He said that after hearing a scream near the wishing well, he found bones, a tiny suit, and gold coins near scorched earth. The evidence is now displayed behind a glass case for visitors to come and see. As a result, a new tradition was born. During an annual leprechaun hunt, 100 ceramic leprechauns are hidden on the mountain. Tourists come every year to try and hunt down the little green statues. Hunters have to buy a 6-euro hunter's license beforehand. In 2019, the 30th anniversary of the leprechaun bones discovery and the 10th anniversary of their official European Union recognition, fortune seekers abandoned their mountain search and instead scoured the town for hidden leprechaun pots, one of which contained a real bar of gold valued at 1,200 euro. If by chance you do stumble upon a leprechaun, not only do you have to remember never to take your eyes off of him, you'll also need to keep in mind that it's illegal to harm him, especially if you live in Slieve Foy. Apparently, there are 236 leprechauns that still live in the caverns there. In 2009, the EU granted heritage status to the remaining Wee people. They now have their own protected sanctuary nestled in the mountain. The directive also protects the animals and flora in the area to help keep the biodiversity of the land safe. But we all know it's not really about the animals and flora, it's the leprechauns. One aspect of the leprechaun most are not aware of is that they can live underwater, which might be another reason why these little fairies are so hard to find. The earliest known folktale to feature a leprechaun comes from the Middle Ages. In it, Fergus MacLetty, the king of Ulster, falls asleep by the beach. He awakens to find three leprechaun attempting to drag him into their undersea lair. The king captures them but releases them after he has promised three wishes. The story suggests the mythical men are sea dwellers, but modern takes on the myth do not often include this lifestyle detail. Personally, I say we embrace this and insist they get a cameo in the next Aquaman movie. You may not be a leprechaun yourself, although I don't really know. I have a lot of people listening to the podcast, you might be, but anyway, if you are not and you have the desire to be one, you can dress up as one and do so for charity. Every March, there are marathons all over the country that encourage the participants to dress like leprechauns. The festive runners help raise money for charity while getting in the St. Patrick's Day spirit. Hopefully, the run is before all the merriment that requires beer. And if you are a leprechaun listening to the podcast, drop me a note. I'd love to hear from you. And I promise, I'm not interested in your gold. As with many old legends and traditions, the image and nature of the leprechaun has changed over time and has been updated and, in some cases, sanitized for a modern audience. Lucky the Leprechaun, mascot of General Mills breakfast cereal Lucky Charms, is probably the best-known fairy of this type. The 1959 Disney movie Darby O'Gill and the Little People also influenced how many people think of the Wee Folk. On the other end of the spectrum, there is the homicidal leprechaun in the leprechaun horror comedy film series played by Willow actor Warwick Davis. For generations, some Irish have been annoyed by leprechauns and the ethnic stereotypes they perpetuate. And for most Americans, leprechauns only appear around St. Patrick's Day. But if you somehow miss the celebrations on March 17th, or just need another excuse to celebrate the Wee Folk, you can observe Leprechaun Day, which is on May 13th, giving you one more opportunity during the year to get blind drunk and blame it on a holiday. Leprechauns offer a morality tale figure whose fables warn against the folly of trying to get rich quick, take what's not rightfully yours, or interfere with the good folk and other magical creatures. Belief in leprechauns and other fairies was once widespread on the Emerald Isle, and real or not, they will continue to amuse and delight us for centuries more. When Weird Darkness returns, we take a dark turn on the Wee Folk, or at least their name. We'll look at the very rare but very real disease sometimes called leprechaunism. Up next. While leprechauns are mythical beings, a rare disease sometimes called leprechaunism is very real. Leprechaunism, also known as Donahue syndrome, is an extremely rare disorder characterized by abnormal resistance to insulin. Some researchers prefer to say Donahue syndrome because leprechaunism may be viewed as pejorative by families according to the Online Mendelian Inheritance in Man, an online catalog of human genes and genetic disorders. Leprechaunism, or Donahue syndrome, is a recessive genetic disorder which occurs when an individual inherits two copies of an abnormal gene for the same trait. Babies with the disorder are usually small before and after birth, according to the National Institutes of Health. They experience failure to thrive, which means they have low birth weight and do not gain weight at the expected rate. They often lack muscle mass and may also have very low body fat under the skin. Characteristics of the syndrome also include abnormally large, low-set and poorly developed ears, a wide, flat nose with upturned nostrils, large, thick lips and a large mouth, and widely spaced, bulging eyes. Affected babies may also have an abnormally small head or microcephaly. There may be excessive hair growth. Most affected individuals have a skin condition called acanthosis nigricans, in which certain patches of skin, such as body folds and creases, become thick, dark, and velvety. Donahue syndrome, or leprechaunism, affects the endocrine system, which regulates the secretion of hormones into the blood system. Abnormalities include excessive secretion of insulin, which regulates blood sugar levels by promoting the movement of glucose into the body's cells. According to the National Organization for Rare Disorders, babies with the disorder cannot use insulin effectively and may have high blood sugar levels or hyperglycemia after eating and low blood sugar levels or hypoglycemia when not eating. Other hormonal effects include enlargement of the breasts and genitals. Other characteristics include intellectual disability, abnormally large hands and feet, an enlarged or distended stomach, enlarged heart, kidneys and other organs, and hernias, where the large intestine may protrude through the abdominal wall or into the groin. Affected babies are also more susceptible to repeated infections. The syndrome is extremely rare. Only 50 cases have ever been reported in medical literature. It was first identified in 1948 by Dr. W. L. Donahue, a Canadian pathologist who wrote about it in the Journal of Pediatrics in 1954. In the reported cases, the disorder occurred twice as often in females as in males. Treatment is usually directed toward the specific symptoms. Endocrinologists treat the hormonal issues, while dermatologists treat the skin problems, for example. Families may also receive genetic counseling. As for the actual fairies themselves, leprechauns are obviously not real beings. At least that's what so-called rational people say. But if that's true, how do you explain the Carlingford Mountain leprechaun found in Ireland? Or one of the Crichton leprechaun in Mobile, Alabama? We touched on the former fairy earlier, but here's the story expanded a bit more. Back in 1989, what can only be described as a leprechaun suit was discovered on Carlingford Mountain in County Louth, alongside some small bones and a collection of 4 gold coins. It was a discovery that divided the wider public. Skeptics saw it as part of an elaborate hoax, concocted by bored jokers after one too many pints of Guinness. To their way of thinking, this was just another example of Irish crank. But a handful of believers saw it as something else – confirmation that some seed of truth existed underneath the centuries of fairy tales and folklore. Chief among them was Kevin McCoilta Woods, a man known to many as Ireland's last leprechaun whisperer. Though still skeptical, Woods was determined to discover the truth, and that same year led an organized leprechaun hunt in the region that sparked confusion and amusement alike. It would ultimately prove a fruitless endeavor, though, with no trace of the ancient Irish being discovered during their travails. Had the leprechauns gone into hiding? Died out? Did they ever exist in the first place? For a while, everything went quiet as interest in finding a real-life leprechaun died down. People turned to normal life, and the whole thing was laughed off. But Woods was undeterred, and in 2002, he came across another discovery that prompted similar bafflement. Located close to a stone wall on Gone Road in Carlingford, he came across yet more coins, gold coins. Had he planted the coins in the hope of adding to the mythology? It's unclear, though things took a turn for the strange when Woods then revealed that the coins had apparently given him the ability to communicate with the Kharag, an elder being who apparently served as the elder of the 236 surviving leprechauns secretly living in the region. A baffling twist with its origins in as much fiction as fact. Quite whether the truth about the existence of leprechauns will ever emerge is unclear. But every year, on the second Sunday in May, Woods leads the annual Carlingford National Leprechaun Hunt through the Irish village. Why May? Remember, May 13th is Leprechaun Day. In 2009, the 236 surviving leprechauns in Ireland were actually afforded protection under the European Habitats Directive. According to the legend, they live at the Slate Rock below Foy Mountain, which is part of the Cooley Mountains in County Louth. As a mark of appreciation to the people of Carlingford for getting them protected as a species, the little people leave 2,000 cauldrons around the streets of Carlingford for the hunters to collect. The whole thing may have been a hoax, but try telling that to this Irish community during hunting season. They might just tell you otherwise. And if you ask the community in Mobile, Alabama, they might tell you the same. "Y'all think you're known for Mardi Gras across the world," comedian Jermaine Funny Maine Johnson recently told an audience in Mobile. "No, the world knows y'all for that leprechaun." It was 2007 when Brian Johnson, then a reporter for NBC affiliate WPMI-TV15, went to investigate a commotion in Mobile's Crichton area and came back with an entry in the Viral Video Hall of Fame. After some residents reported seeing a mysterious figure in a tree, others piled on to add to the creation of a modern myth – the Crichton Leprechaun. The block party atmosphere of the event rapidly faded, as did reports of sightings, but an amateur sketch featured in the report became a part of Mobile's iconography. An icon as instantly recognizable as the spire of the RSA Tower, the silhouette of the USS Alabama, or the oft-painted cannon at the intersection of Government and Houston streets. It's been featured on beer labels, t-shirts, Mardi Gras floats, and who knows what else. Never mind the fact that the sketch looks like it was drawn by a three-year-old. When an AL.com reporter investigated the phenomenon and its legacy in 2019, several interesting points emerged. Among them, the original sketch was auctioned off for $1,100 with proceeds to benefit the American Red Cross. If you'd like to see that original Brian Williams video from 2007, I'll place a link to it in the show notes. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, please share it with someone you know who loves the paranormal or strange stories, true crime, monsters, or unsolved mysteries like you do. You can email me anytime with your questions or comments at darren@weirddarkness.com. Darren is D-A-R-R-E-N. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and more, along with the show's Facebook group on the contact page at weirddarkness.com. Do you have a dark tale to tell of your own? Click on Tell Your Story on the website and I might use it in a future episode. All stories in Weird Darkness are purported to be true unless stated otherwise, and you can find source links or links to the authors in the show notes. And now that we're coming out of the dark, I'll leave you with a little light. Psalm 34, verse 8. "Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in Him." And a final thought. Happiness starts with you, not with your relationships, not with your job, not with your money or finding a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but with you. Happiness starts with you. I'm Darren Marlar. Thanks for joining me in the Weird Darkness.